Hey, Bill Nye, the science guy here.
This is Salman Rushdie.
Hi, this is Julia Sweeney.
I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson.
This is Theo Wilson.
Hi, this is Dar Williams.
I'm Mr. Deity, and you're listening to The Humanist Hour. I command you to listen now, or I will smite you.
You say I'm a sound scientist, came to evaluate the evidence on a closed case, highly classified, confidential, in a race against the clock.
Hello, it is May 25th, 2011. Welcome to the Humanist Hour podcast. I am Todd Stiefel.
And I'm Jess Constantine. The Humanist Hour is the official podcast of the American Humanist Association.
Humanism is the life stance of being good without God.
We've got a lot to talk about today, Todd. We've got all of the various free thought events that happened over the month. And we're also going to play the acceptance speech of Candace Gingrich Jones, winning the first ever Humanist Pride Award.
And then after that clip, we'll also be playing some behind-the-scenes footage where we had the opportunity to interview Candace.
But first, I just have to mention, Todd, that it's May 25th, and we're both still alive.
We are indeed. They failed to rapture me. I think I've been left behind.
You're like, we don't want them.
I don't blame them. You seem to be here as well.
I am, but I chose not to go. They wanted me real bad.
Did they? They keep saying they want me, but their actions speak louder than words. I'm pretty sure they don't.
I think they really only wanted me because of my initials.
A little JC.
Yep.
There can be only one.
And it's me. No. I've seen some pretty cool pranks, pictures of, you know, people just sort of leaving their clothes in funny positions as if they've been raptured.
It's awesome. I wish I had done something like that. I was at the Sacred Coalition for America Strategy Summit this weekend, which we'll talk about more later. But one of the people went jogging around DC and found clothes and shoes on the National Mall with signs about how ridiculous it all was. And
that's awesome.
Apparently, they got cleaned up by security and police pretty quickly.
I love it. Anyway, so what did you do to celebrate? What was your rapture after party like?
Well, I went to see a comedian and then PZ Meyer speak at a Center for Inquiry event in DC. It was actually really interesting and a lot of fun.
That's awesome.
And hit a couple bars afterwards and just hung out and had a good time with a bunch of fun humanists.
Now, did you have any of your top five beers at the bar that you went to?
I did not have any of my top five beers that particular night. I presume you're referring to the posts I had in the Humanist Network News, and Maggie Ardiente also had one on her top five wines, which is pretty cool. I'm looking forward to checking those out.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I really enjoyed writing that piece, and it actually really liked those aspects of Humanist Network News, because while the activist portion of humanism is critical and really important, you know, humanists are just well-rounded people who have all sorts of interests and things they love and enjoy. You know, I think it keeps our movement well-rounded.
I definitely agree. I think it's good to get a feel and to give suggestions for, you know, we've got recipes that we're talking about soon. We've got beer, we've got wine, movies, books, all kinds of things that, you know, we're actually asking our listeners and our readers to offer suggestions to sort of spread the love, share the knowledge, you know?
Yeah, there's lots of stuff we love and enjoy doing. And, you know, some of us even like Miller Lite.
I'm not going to get on the train with you there.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I put my top five beers, but they weren't like necessarily my top five most flavorful beers. Just the top five that I enjoy drinking, and included one of them as Miller Lite is not necessarily one of the ones that taste the best. I think I refer to it as homeopathic beer, but as one that when I'm out at a bar or a stadium and there's not a lot of options, that's definitely my favorite of the macro brews. But I've been getting relentlessly attacked, like, how can you like Miller Lite? You heretic, burn him.
I should comment, actually, that there's also a couple really good gluten-free beers on the market for those of us wheat-intolerant folk. And one of them is actually made by Anheuser-Busch. They don't make Miller, though. They make Bud, right? They make Bud Light? Yeah. Their Redbridge beer, which is made out of sorghum. So some of our local brewers have sort of, I've asked them, when are you going to start making a gluten-free beer? They're like, it can't be gluten-free and a beer. That's an oxymoron. I was like, well, give me a gluten-free ale then, whatever you want to call it, something that I can drink. But anyway, it's made out of sorghum. It's actually quite nutty. I like it. It's good. Smooth. It's cold.
Do you have a favorite beer, or is that the one?
My favorite beer is probably not of the gluten-free fold. We have a local brewer that makes an oatmeal stout, which is, I guess, similar to maybe Guinness. Like, it's dark and it's a lot thinner than you think it's going to be. It's a lot lighter than you think it's going to be, but it's got this just wonderful taste. I also enjoy Blue Moon, or pretty much anything that I can put a slice of fruit in. It makes me happy.
I do love Blue Moon. I did have one of those the evening of the Not Rapture, and it was phenomenal.
Yeah, there's just something about it. I mean, it tastes almost like it has the orange in it, even if it doesn't. I don't know how they do
it. So good. But go get some Weihenstephaner and some Aphrodite. And even I had a oatmeal stout on the list, Boris the Crusher, which is a...
Yes.
That was a terrible Russian accent. It kind of sounded Austrian, but, you know.
You sounded a little bit like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Arnold likes Boris the Crusher. Listeners, if you'd like to enjoy the interesting articles in the weekly e-zine of the American Humanist Association, which is the Humanist Network News, you can read those and even subscribe via RSS or email at AmericanHumanist.org/HNN. So anyway, this weekend was the Secular Coalition for America's Strategy Summit, which I was able to attend along with about 100 humanists and atheists. And as a matter of fact, the American Humanist Association is one of the member organizations for the Secular Coalition for America. It was a pretty cool event and was not intentionally corresponding to the Day of Rapture, but did happen to do so.
Nice. So give us a highlight. What happened at the summit?
There was a lot of great things that happened. We had some strategy sessions where we broke out and came up with ideas for what to do in the future in the movement. And we had a lobbying training day. We had some great panel discussions, as well as a actual lobbying day on Friday. We went out, about 75 of us, I believe, and went to Capitol Hill and met with the staffs of senators and congresspeople from across the country. I believe we hit over half of the offices of people in the Senate, which is pretty cool, and lobbied them on issues important to our movement. So pretty fantastic. One of the things we hit was the concept of patient rights, because there is a bill in the House of Representatives, 1179, that would essentially give doctors and pharmacists and other people in the medical field the right to discriminate in healthcare. So quite literally, it's a freedom of conscience act is the way they want to spin it. But basically, if somebody disagreed on moral grounds with somebody, they could refuse to treat them. So they could refuse to give out contraceptives if they disagreed with the woman's choice to use contraceptives. And they could theoretically also, if they disagreed with homosexuality, discriminate on those grounds as well, which is pretty scary when you think about emergency room doctors, for example.
Absolutely.
Yeah, a homosexual shows up at the emergency room bleeding out, and the doctor's like, my religious beliefs are opposed to homosexuality, so I refuse to treat this person, let them die. I mean, they would literally legalize that. It's terrifying. So we were speaking out against that and had some very good support, fortunately.
Isn't there the Hippocratic Oath?
There is. So, but yeah, these crazy religious fundamentalists are trying to change the laws wherever they can, and they spin it to try to sound good. Like, you wouldn't want somebody to violate their conscience. It's like, what if their conscience is evil?
Yeah.
But it was a great day. We made a lot of progress, I believe, and really helped educate some people. We talked about the concept of humanist chaplains in the military, and we're encouraging support of that when that gets to Congress. And it was a fun, enjoyable, and educational experience. So pretty exciting stuff coming out with Secular Coalition for America there.
That sounds great. I'm excited to see what happens in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. So you were telling me that we had an interesting listener comment.
Yes.
And that Google attempted to translate this, and as often is done here, the translation was completely, utterly butchered, and hilarity ensued.
Yes. So we received a listener comment from Amanda Pinkham, who she runs an organization called Free Thinkers of the World. And I'm going to play her listener comment. But before we do that, I think it's important that you guys hear how Google attempted to translate her comment. And so for those of you not sure of how this works, when you call and leave us a voicemail, it's at a Google voice box, and we're sent an email with a quote unquote transcript of your message, as well as an attachment of the actual audio file. And so sometimes it's fun to try and read, and sometimes I can understand what it is that you're saying. Other times, which is the case here, I have no idea what's happening and what Google is doing. I don't really know. So anyway, I'm going to read you the script of her comment, but then I'm also going to play it so that you can actually understand what Amanda was trying to communicate with us.
This is going to be awesome, listeners. We were reading this before and just absolutely cracking up, and we're going to be starting a regular segment, which we don't have a name for yet. Maybe we'll call it Google Garbles or something like that.
I like it.
That, where we will read these things out, and you can get a good laugh and attempt to understand what it is when we read the print version, and then we'll play you back the real version. But please note to Amanda and other people in the future, we are not making fun of what you have said. We are making fun of what Google has made of it.
Absolutely. And if for no other reason, listeners, call our listener comment line to see how Google translates you. 202-618-1371.
Awesome. All right, go for it. I got to hear this again, Jess.
All right.
And I'm sorry if I start laughing in the middle. Just keep going.
Okay. Hello, my name is Amanda Kengum. I ran organization called the Free Stinkers of the World, and I listen to your podcast all the time, and I just want to let all your listeners know that we're in the organization. We've only been around about 8 months, but we're really picking up, and we're really excited, and we're working with Could Start Focusing to do a contest right now. But our website is freezing, courseoftheworld.com, not three fingers of the world. com and Ross won Facebook. Sorry. So we just want to promote free thinking. And if you have any questions, let us know. We're right on Facebook, and we have a website there. So if you could either let your readers know or play this as well, that would be fantastic. They appreciate the support. Thank you so much. Bye bye. So that's the translation, obviously.
Free Stinkers of the World.
Yes.
Yes, indeed.
Yes. I'd like to draw your attention to Free Stinkers of the World, as well as Three Fingers of the World, and also Freezing Course of the World. All three of those were their interpretation of the name of the organization and website, Free Thinkers of the World. So here is the actual voicemail.
Hello, my name is Amanda Pinkham, and I run an organization called the Free Thinkers of the World. And I listen to your podcast all the time, and I just wanted to let all your listeners know that we're a new organization. We've only been around about 8 months, but we're really picking up, and we're really excited, and we're working with Pitchstone Publishing to do a contest right now. But our website is freethinkersoftheworld.com. That's freethinkersoftheworld.com. And we're also on Facebook, so we just want to promote free thinking. And if you have any questions, let us know. We're right on Facebook, and we have our website there. So if you could either let your readers know or play this for them, that would be fantastic. I appreciate the support. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Amanda Pinkham, not Amanda Cancom, as Google garbled. And while I've wanted to give the finger to the world at times, I now definitely want to give three fingers of the world to the world.
That's awesome. Amanda, thank you so much for calling, and I'm excited to see how your organization grows. And once again, listeners, our number for the listener comment line is 202-618-1371. We would love to hear from you. So, Todd, May was a pretty busy month, wasn't it, for the non-believers?
It was indeed. We had our Day of Reason earlier this month, which we talked about in last month's show, and we had a pretty awesome event down here in the Triangle.
Hold on. The Triangle?
The Triangle.
What's the Triangle? What's the Triangle?
Well, there's the Bermuda Triangle, which this is not, but the Triangle is the Raleigh-Durham-Chapel Hill area of North Carolina, where I reside. So, listeners, forgive me, but many of my stories involve local things, and a lot of my in-person activities are here. So, that's why I tend to hear about events going on here, because this is where my personal experience is. Anyway, we had a really awesome event. In past years, the fundamentalists and evangelicals have had their event on the North Carolina State Capitol grounds, and their event being the National Day of Prayer. And they've put the official seal of the state, or rather the state has allowed them to put the official seal on their podium, and they have preached and prayed and had Supreme Court justices of the state show up and give speeches, and generally completely butchered the wall of separation of church and state. And so last year we thought it would be good if we try to reserve the Capitol grounds to see if the state would be fair in allowing us to reserve it. And they were. And all the power to them and all the credit to them. But we ended up having the Capitol grounds instead of the fundamentalists and had a National Day of Reason there instead. And it was awesome. Roy Speckhart and Maggie Ardante of the AHA came down, and Roy gave a speech, and Sean Faircloth of Secular Coalition for America came down and spoke as well. Cecil Bothwell, the Asheville City Councilman, came down and also gave a talk. And I got the opportunity to give a speech on the Capitol grounds, which was a real lot of fun, actually.
That sounds awesome, Todd. So were people there protesting you guys?
There was only one protester who had a big sign talking about wrath, vengeance, and hellfire and the like, who was across the street. And I called him out during my talk. I brought up a part about how the fundamentalists don't love people, that they don't like love women because they don't allow them equality, and they don't allow them to be priests and pastors in many congregations, and they don't love the dying because they're opposed to euthanasia and the like. And I started it off, I wasn't planning on it, but when I saw him there, I started off with something along the lines of, well, fundamentalists don't love people. They're all about, their values are predominantly around hate. And I said, Exhibit A. And I pointed to the guy across the street and thanked him for bringing his message of wrath, hate, eternal torture to us. So we could very easily contrast his message with the messages of love and liberty and truth that we were promoting. Nice. And what was awesome was he left like right afterwards. So maybe we scared him off. Who knows? But it was pretty cool.
That's awesome. That reminds me of when Camp Quest, Summer Camp Beyond Belief, was on the Colbert Report. Mm-hmm. And they were mocking how religious people were saying, you know, any non-believers or free thinkers are going to live eternally in a lake of hellfire. And so he had this picture of kids canoeing in a lake of hellfire. He was like, die, kids, die. It's pretty funny.
I could feel the love, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, well, I'm glad to hear that your event was a success. Did you have a lot of people come, a lot of supporters as well?
We had about, at the max, we had about 170 people there at the event, and about 350 came through at various points. Nice. Afterwards, we went out, about 70 of us went out for lunch together. Then we went to the Museum of Science, and then we had additional discussions that night. Sean and Roy had different presentations they gave in the evening, and then we went out to dinner. So it was an all-day event. It was a blast.
That sounds awesome.
Multiple meals, and it was really cool, really fun. And we were able to record the events of the day, and it was pretty sweet.
So listeners, you can watch all of the speeches that Todd has mentioned on the Triangle Freethought Society's Vimeo website. So just go to vimeo.com and search for Triangle Freethought Society. We'll also have links to that page and all these videos on the show notes page for this episode. Okay, Todd, so up next is our featured guest for this month's show. And before we reveal her true identity, let's see if our listeners can guess who she is by some of the things that she is well known for. She guest starred on the television sitcom Friends, where she officiated a ceremony between two recurring characters. The episode was called The One with a Lesbian Wedding. She is author of a book, Accidental Activist, a personal and political memoir. She is a LGBT activist for the Human Rights Campaign. And she is also a half-sister of former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich.
And presidential candidate and recent convert to Catholicism, Newt. But I personally think Candace is much, much cooler.
Oh, absolutely.
I had the opportunity to meet her last year at prom in Mississippi for Constance McMillan, and we had some really cool conversations. And yeah, she's done some amazing things. She was in charge of their out campaign at the Human Rights Campaign for about 4 years, and has just done some amazing things to change the world.
So here's a clip from Candace Gingrich accepting the first ever LGBT Humanist Pride Award. This was certainly a highlight for me at AHA's 70th annual conference this past April in Cambridge, Mass. So listeners, I hope that you enjoy her comments as well. Here's Candace Gingrich Jones accepting the LGBT Humanist Pride Award.
Well, I'm beyond honored to receive the first ever Humanist Pride Award. And I am beyond honored to get to come speak here after Judy. It kind of makes me giggle thinking that if we were on the House floor in Florida State, she wouldn't have been able to say most of the words that she used without being denounced as obscene. So for the GOP in Florida, I would like to say uterus. uterus. I had the honor to get to meet Roy and Maggie and also Todd and Diane in Tupelo. You probably are familiar with what all happened there. It was one of the most horrific things that I think has ever really happened. You know, I've heard lots of stories, and we get contacted at the Human Rights Campaign often by same-sex couples who want to go to their prom and who are told no. And that's what happened in Mississippi at Itawamba Agricultural High School. And the young woman, Constance McMillan, said, you know, I'm not going to take this. She went to the ACLU. The ACLU said, you don't have to take this, and basically wrote a letter to the school saying, look, there is no legal reason that you can keep her from bringing her same-sex date to the prom. The high school administrators, being the mature folk that they are, said, well, if we have to let her come, we're not going to have a prom. Very, very mature. So, but some folks in the community were like, you know, parents were like, well, I want my child to have their prom experience. So let's, you know, put some money together and put on a prom for the students. And Constance was invited to this other prom. Well, Constance and her date showed up to an event that consisted of Constance and her date and the principal and the vice principal and a guidance counselor and a few other students who happened to be developmentally disabled. While in another location, the actual prom was taking place. Now, you know, you might understand why the Human Rights Campaign, you know, might get involved and want to be supportive of the second chance prom to be held. But I, you know, at the time wasn't sure why the American Humanist Association was involved as well, although I knew it was a good organization. They do good things and thought, you know, the more the merrier. But in you know, doing my research before coming here, and actually my wife Rebecca pointed out to me that one of the tenets or one of the philosophies of being a humanist is to affirm dignity of every human. And Constance was definitely a woman whose dignity was not affirmed in any way whatsoever. And so I'm glad that I had the chance to become familiar with AHA then and to be able to stand here in front of you all today and receive this this amazing award. I think humanism, I know humanism and LGBT issues are very natural allies in a lot of ways. I myself knew that I was a humanist long before I realized that I was a lesbian. I had my vision, my awakening, in Sunday school one day when they were explaining, you know, why the weeping willow tree is weeping. They used the thorns, the branches from the willow tree to make the crown of thorns they put on Jesus' head, and it made the tree sad. And so ever since, the weeping willow tree has been weeping. And I remember at that age thinking, what? how is that any different from, like, you know, Thor, like, creating, like, thunder and lightning and all those things that the mythology that you told us isn't, like, what? And so that started me on my path of doubt. And it took me a while longer to figure out that I was a lesbian. At some point after my brother became a member of Congress, there was a reporter interviewing the family, and I can't remember if it was my mom or dad that answered the question, but the reporter was like, well, what about the rest of the family? Do you know, what are the religious beliefs of the other people in the family? And my mom or dad said, well, we're Lutheran. One of our daughters is a Protestant, and the other daughter is, I think, a Methodist, and, you know, Newt and his wife are Baptist, and Candace is a vegetarian. yeah. But in both, humanism and in LGBT equality issues, there are two pretty big roadblocks. One of those roadblocks is ignorance, and the other roadblock is organized religion. In particular, you know, I think that organized religion as a roadblock to LGBT equality is most prevalent in the issue of marriage equality. I am happy to point out and acknowledge that my wife is here with me today as well. And the last time that we were in Boston was in August of 2009 when we came up to get married. So it's nice to be back. But the issue of marriage equality has become politicized and religiousized, I think very purposefully, by those who don't want to see same-sex couples have marriage equality. When we started talking about marriage in the late 1990s, early 2000s, it was such a new issue for so many people. I mean, when I came out to my mom in 1987, you know, one of the things that she said to me was, well, at least your dad and I won't have to pay for your wedding. And I mean, I laughed too, because I was like, oh, I know, because I never thought, you know, that at any point, you know, would it ever be a possibility. So when the dialogue started happening, a lot of people just didn't have information or didn't have any way to think about it. And so for a good lot of Americans, it was a knee-jerk reaction. It was kind of a gut reaction. You know, they heard gay marriage, and they saw, you know, two women in tuxes or two men in wedding gowns, like, walking down the aisle of their church or their temple, and that kind of freaked them out. But I know, and I know that you know, that marriage is not about, it can be, if you want, the ceremonial, about the religious, about the, for some denominations, what that tradition is. But what marriage is about is about recognizing that loving same-sex couples should have the ability to take care of each other, to be recognized, to have families, and have the same opportunities and protections that heterosexual couples are afforded. And that message is still a really important one today, because the opposition to marriage equality still comes from those who say, my Bible says, my faith says, or I don't want my priest, minister, pastor, rabbi to be forced to hold wedding ceremonies in our church, our temple, our synagogue, when it has absolutely nothing to do with that. But those who are opposed to marriage equality know that still freaks people out. So I guess, you know, what we've seen is that 2004, we saw 9 or 10 statewide ballots pass saying that, amending their constitution, saying that marriage would only be recognized between one man and one woman. And that statewide ballot amendments were kind of described as being given the final exam on the second day of class. You know, we had barely started discussing the topic, and people were voting just on their stomachs, on their guts. But fortunately, the dialogue hasn't stopped. The conversation has continued. One of the things that comes with that certificate from the federal government is there are 1,143 things that come with being legally married in America. Like, who knew? But they actually have the Government Accounting Office, like, do a survey and look through all of the regulations and whatnot. I find there's 1,143 things that come with being married. And you know what? Not a single one of them has to do with religious ceremonies, with religion, with anything that has to do with that. But it has to do with taking care of each other and having families and being able to raise them. Now, as 2012 gets closer, we are going to see LGBT issues, and in particular marriage equality, get talked about more and more and more and more. Recently, one of the presumptive candidates was quoted as saying he was asked about gay marriage, and his response was, well, that he thinks on traditional marriage that, you know, it's going to be a long and complex struggle with the courts, making it worse because they're intervening without regard to popular opinion. Well, last time I checked, equality was not a popularity contest. And, you know, there's that whole, you know, tyranny of the majority and the all of that. I don't know. Maybe that part didn't get read by that presumptive presidential candidate. But I guess I have two responses to that, and they're kind of at odds with each other. But one of them is, well, if it is a popularity contest, you know, your side is losing and ours is winning. The Washington Post released a poll a couple weeks ago that found that 53% of Americans believe that same-sex marriage should be legal in our country. 53%, the first time that it had ever been over 50%. So... on the other hand, if you want to put things to a popularity vote, you know, I would like to hear this candidate's thoughts on the state of Mississippi, which recently was polled and found that 44% of Mississippians think that interracial marriage should be illegal again. So I don't know, maybe if that reaches 50%, that can become somebody's campaign, you know, issue that they want to talk about. So of those two things that are roadblocks to equality, ignorance and organized religion, one of those we might not be able to change or may not even want to try and change, or we know we don't want to try and change. But the other, we have the ability to affect. We have the ability to change ignorance that people have about LGBT issues. In most of our country, you can be fired for being gay, and there's nothing you can do about it. A lot of people don't realize that. In a lot of our country, you can still be denied a hotel room. You can be denied renting of a room. You can be denied public accommodation because of your sexual orientation or gender identity. A lot of people still don't realize that. And so I am honored and happy to be engaged, you know, with the AHA in moving forward on this, because I know, too, that it's another part of what you all do. That humanism is the philosophy of avid service for the greater good of humanity. And you've already been doing this work, and I look forward to continuing this work with you, because it is, yes, it's legislation, it's getting the right people elected, but what it really comes down to is the conversations that we have with each other. It's about the relationships that we build. It's about the chance to engage others in discussions about equality and about these issues. It's been said that fear and ignorance are the breeding grounds of hate. And we know that there is far too much hate in our country and the entire world right now. But I am strengthened. I am encouraged to know that there are committed folks like yourselves who are willing to have those sometimes difficult conversations about LGBT equality. So I would just encourage you and ask you, water cooler, on the bus, in the cafeteria, when, you know, Uncle Bob tells that anti-gay joke at the Memorial Day picnic that he always does, that when we have these opportunities to take advantage of them and shine a little bit of truth and reality to the ignorance that still exists out there. Because there are still actually people in this country who don't think they know anybody who's gay. And, you know, we know that couldn't be further from the truth. But if you don't know somebody who's gay, you're going to probably get your information from other sources. And that will tend to be the you know, your Focus on the Family newsletter or your American Family Association newsletter or various Fox News programs. But we can help whether you are queer yourself. If you're an ally, you have the ability to change that ignorance as well, too. And sometimes your voices get heard long before ours do. And so I would encourage you to continue engaging people in the dialogue about LGBT equality. I also want to acknowledge that I'm happy and honored to be here today because I could have been on the campus of Catholic University of America for the preview of one of my brother's movies, which is called 9 Days That Changed the World, all about Pope John Paul II, and his trip to Poland and how that caused the downfall of communism. But Rebecca and I, well, we've already seen the movie, to be honest. And even though Catholic University of America is where my wife will be getting her MFA in May of this year, we figured, you know, we could find some better things to do here in Boston. So thank you, AHA. Thank you for honoring me, and thank you for being with me in this work as we move forward for equality for all people. Thank you.
All right, we have time for a couple of questions.
So thank you so much for your talk. That was excellent. My question is, it seems that the atheist and humanist movements have, for the most part, been very welcoming and accepting of LGBT people and very outspoken on our issues, but that it hasn't been the other way around as much, that the LGBT communities haven't been as welcoming and accepting of atheists and humanists and non-believers, or that they're accepting of us only to the degree that we shut up about our non-belief. And I'm wondering, what do you think we can do to get movement on that within the LGBT communities?
I think in working with the Human Rights Campaign over the past 16 years, I've seen a movement to be more engaging of organized religion on LGBT issues, and you're right, and not necessarily embracing or engaging the humanist side of things, and I think there are two things there. One is, you know, for decades, the conversation about LGBT issues has kind of been, when it comes to religion, has kind of been ceded to those that are opposed to LGBT issues. You know, for too long, it was like, oh, if you're a person of faith, you got to be anti-gay. If you're a gay person, you can't be a person of faith. And only in the recent, you know, I think maybe, you know, 6 or 7 years, have we started to really, you know, see a change in that there are also, you know, it's not just the Jerry Falwells, you know, of the world who are speaking against LGBT issues, but it's also the Harry Knoxes and the Peter Gomes who are speaking in support of. There is a natural place for, obviously, for everyone in the work for LGBT equality, and I know that one of the things that we have a religion and faith department, and one of the things that they host every 2 years is a thing called the Clergy Call for Faith and Justice, and actually it's bringing different clergy and lay people from all over the country to D.C. to do lobbying, to visit with their members of Congress, and that I don't think this had happened the previous 2 years, but this is the first year that at least up until now so far, there is somebody who identifies as a humanist who is engaged in coming to, even though we call it Clergy Call for Faith and Justice, is engaging in that. And so I think that's a very important way to you know, to bridge that gap is to, you know, rather than, you know, you don't want to have anything to do with us, say, I'm going to make sure that I have something to do, you know, with the work that you're doing. So I thank you for asking that question, and I would encourage you all to openly identify as humanists when you engage in anything with LGBT equality issues, whether it's around workplace protection or marriage issues or gender identity issues. You know, make your presence known because there is so much work to do. Obviously, we need everyone to be contributing.
I just wanted to follow up on Greta's excellent question and say that I am going as a humanist to the Human Rights Council's clergy call, and it seems an odd, inverted way to get recognition for the non-religious community to go to a clergy call and represent humanism. But I do hope that it will be a way, and I think you're coming with me too, Chris, so we're both going to go, and anyone can go. You don't have to be a clergy person. So if we could get a big contingent of humanists going to lobby all day and for a number of days, your representatives from all around the country on LGBT issues to lobby for equality from an explicitly humanist perspective, then I think we would get more of that recognition that we really deserve for having been first on these issues and in the right place on LGBT rights for many decades. So I encourage everyone to sign up. It doesn't cost much to go.
Thank you. And we would love to have you. I mean, Washington, it's not Boston, but it's there's some fun things to do in Washington, and it's a great opportunity to talk to your members of Congress in person. Sometimes, a lot of times, we forget that they work for us. And the way that we can help them is by telling them what we want them to be doing. And in-person, face-to-face is just such a powerful, impactful way to do that because they can't ignore you when you're sitting in front of them. They may in their head be going, la, 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 I'm not listening. But something will sink in, I promise you. And so, no matter what your issue is, you know, take those advantages to have those one-on-one or in-person conversations with your elected officials because you will change them.
Hi. I'm on the Asheville, North Carolina City Council, and North Carolina Republicans are pushing to put a ballot measure on next November's ballot to make marriage only between a man and a woman. But Asheville just became the latest city in North Carolina to pass a domestic partner registry, where we can at least accord some recognition to domestic partners, and it's spreading through the more progressive cities in North Carolina. I wondered if you see that happening in other more or less conservative states through other cities.
You see, there's it's a learning curve. It's kind of a progress curve across the country, but in cities that it's kind of. For some people, it's a kind of marriage light thing. It's not a civil union even. It's not full marriage. But it is recognizing that there are LGBT families that they want to care for their families just like straight couples. All of the data hasn't come out from the 2010 census, but the 2000 census found that, and I may get these wrong, but 1 out of 3 lesbian couples and 2 out of 5 gay male couples in America were raising children and had children. And domestic partner benefits is a way to recognize, we know that your family exists and, protecting you is something important to us. Asheville is kind of special when it comes to North Carolina. It is, not, it's unlike some of the other cities there. But it is the kind of thing that we've seen, even in central Pennsylvania, in other more kind of rural areas where you wouldn't think this stuff would ever happen. There have been, steps made in the right direction. And I would say that your being on city council probably was a good thing in relation to that. And so I guess I would encourage all of the rest of you to run for and represent your city, be on your city council so we can make this good stuff happen.
I'm dreaming of a world with no gods at all, no separation, nobody taking sides at all, no Holocaust, no one indoctrinating our children, no religious fanatics flying planes into our buildings, everybody playing in the game of life in which they can't lose, instead of killing for an invisible man they can't prove, nobody dying over a book, no crusades, no war on terror headed by Bush, I'm dreaming of a world where there is no such place as the Bible Belt, instead of looking...
That was Candace Gigrich-Jones accepting the first ever LGBT Humanist Pride Award at AHA's 70th Annual Conference. For more information or to purchase her book, The Accidental Activist, you can visit the link to that book on Amazon at the show notes page for this episode.
You can also learn more about Candace and her work, as well as the work of the Human Rights Campaign at hrc.org.
So Todd, before we move on and play our interview with Candace Gingrich, I thought we could talk just a little bit about something that is going to be happening during the month of June, which is very much related to Candace's activism, and that is LGBT Pride and all the sort of various Pride events that are happening around the world. It's entirely likely that there is a Pride event happening in your area. So to find out, go to interpride.org, interpride.org, and you can click right on the link for global calendar, and that'll bring you to a rather long events list. And that's pretty awesome. That makes me happy.
There are tons of them going on around the country and the world in June. So great time to check them out.
So moving right along, Todd, next we're going to play our interview with Candace Gingrich Jones. And listeners, you're going to hear some additional voices helping us out on this interview. And I'll just give you a little background on the folks who are helping us out there. I think just by their names and what they do, you'll be able to tell who's who. So we have Jason Fry, who is the president of the Humanist Association of San Diego. He's also a humanist celebrant. We have Greta Christina, who's been writing professionally since 1989 on topics like atheism, sexuality, LGBT issues, politics, culture, and whatever else crosses her mind. And finally, we have Andrew Copson, who is the chief executive officer of the British Humanist Association. In one of the coming months, you'll hear a little conversation that we got to have with Andrew. He's a fantastic fellow.
Yeah, I wish we had more time with all the people in the room because we had so many great minds, but we still got to do a really wonderful interview, and here, check it out.
Hi, my name is Jason Fry, and I am the LGBT Humanist Council Coordinator for the American Humanist Association, and you're on Speaking with the Siblings of the Speakers. Just kidding. All right. So to start off, I think we'll talk about what's on everyone's mind, rugby. Candace plays rugby for the Washington Furies. Candace, could you tell us a little bit about playing rugby and your experience with that?
Well, rugby actually was one of the catalysts to my being to my coming out, because I, you know, started realizing that I was attracted to other girls, you know, during puberty. So, you know, Girl Scout camp, to be exact. I know that's probably shocking to some people. But this was, you know, the late 70s, early 80s. And I was, you know, fine, you know, with what I was feeling, except that I didn't really have any way to process what I was feeling, because there weren't gay people out at school, and there weren't gay people on television. And if they were, they were always the bad person. And so, you know, I just kind of chose to, you know, I didn't think they were bad, but I just didn't have any way to deal with them. So I just ignored, you know, those feelings. And when I got to college, though, I joined the women's rugby team in my my junior year, my third year, I guess, since there were five of them. And you know, it's one of those things, you know, not all lesbians play rugby and not all rugby players are lesbians, but
some of us play basketball too.
There is some overlap, right? And you know, there were women on the team who were out, and it was just finally seeing that I was able to be like, oh, okay, there are other people like me, you know, oh, this is, it's all right. And it was able to, I was able to just kind of like finally be comfortable with who I was. And I haven't stopped playing rugby since. So it's an amazing, amazing sport. It's something that hopefully more and more Americans will begin to embrace and understand, especially since a version of rugby called Sevens is going to be part of the 2016 Olympics. Mm-hmm. So that's going to help, I think, America with our never-ending competitiveness. They'll get some attention with that. But it's a great sport, and I highly recommend it to everyone in the world.
And along with playing rugby, you met someone special in your time playing rugby. Is that correct?
I did. I met you, Jason. No. no, I actually met my wife playing rugby. I had been playing with the Washington Furies for some years, and Rebecca moved to D.C., had played rugby in college and was looking for a team and started playing with the Furies. And that was the the beginning, and we got married last August, or 2009, I should say, August, here in Boston. So sometimes rugby is a good stress reliever, and sometimes it's a good dating service.
Fantastic. So speaking of beginnings, Candace, you've talked about your discovery coming out as a lesbian and meeting Rebecca. Can you also talk about, which is something that you cover in your book, Accidental Activist, you're coming to be an activist?
Well, I guess, you know, being an LGBT activist kind of took a roundabout journey. You know, I, you know, before I accepted and acknowledged that I was a lesbian, I knew I was a woman, and that led me to be a feminist, and that, you know, that also led me to be a Democrat, right? So, so I was active in the choice community and active in women's issues, but it wasn't until I really started understanding what the country was like for a lot of LGBT people that I started to get engaged, because, you know, I was out to my family and, you know, and they were fine. I was fortunate. Nobody, you know, wanted to kick me out or, like, you know, disown me. I was out at work and never, you know, that I was aware of, you know, faced discrimination or was treated differently in any other way. I didn't know anybody who had been, you know, the victim of a hate crime or, you know, and so it was, I was living in, you know, what I've realized now is just kind of like, you know, rose-tinted, you know, looking through rose-tinted glasses and like, all right, well, this is how life is for me as a gay person. It's probably what it's like for everyone. And it wasn't until, you know, my brother became Speaker of the House and I had the opportunity to work with the Human Rights Campaign that really started to change, because what happened was, not only was I getting an education about reality, that there are still people who get kicked out of their homes for, you know, or kicked out of school or, you know, denied scholarships or whatever because of it. But people, you know, can be fired because they're gay and there's nothing they can do about it. That people can be, you know, the victim of a hate crime and law enforcement, you know, agency can choose, you know, to not prosecute it as a hate crime if they don't think that it's a hate crime. You know, that there are still judges who will deny custody to a biological child because the parent happens to be gay. You know, not only was I realizing this and finding this out, but I was meeting people who were the ones who had been fired and who had had custody taken away. And, you know, it's that that one-on-one kind of that personalizing of it that just it you know, it helped me understand that there was a lot of work that needed to be done and that I, you know, could play a part in it. And, you know, to know, however, you know, 16 years later and people are still fired for being gay or not hired. You know, there are still, you know, states, you know, that say you're not fit to be an adoptive parent. You know, no matter how many hundreds of thousands of kids are in foster care, there are still states who say you're not fit. That, you know, things are changing, and one of the most important things that is changing is that more people are aware of it. And so when it comes time to vote or when it comes time to speak up on issues, fortunately we've got more people who have, you know, decided this is an issue that I'm going to do something about.
Candace, can you tell us a story about your activism that you're particularly proud of?
Well, I got this award earlier today from the American Humanist Association. You know, I think that I am really, really proud of that award. I mean, I think it's the only time that I've been the first ever recipient of, you know, something of an award, and so that, you know, that is really special, and particularly with the you know, similarities and a lot of commonalities between the LGBT issues and movement and the humanist movement. I think, you know, one of the things is just seeing people change, you know, and so it's not like like one big giant thing that I can point to and say this was it, but just being able to see people progress. One of those people, like being my own mom, who when I started becoming active, her first fear and belief was that I was, you know, it was all about sibling rivalry. And I was just, you know, doing it somehow to, you know, to make Newt look bad, you know, or that I was somehow a pawn of the Democratic Party and that, you know, I was being used to, you know, whatever. And, you know, don't go dragging Nudie's name through the mud, you know, like she would say things like that. And, you know, which I totally get. I mean, he was, you know, her firstborn. And so, like, I get all of it. But she also was able to get and understand why I was doing what I was doing. So much to the point that in 1996 was when the Defense of Marriage Act was introduced and passed. And there was a strategy that that a number of the organizations came up with to attach the employment bill to the Defense of Marriage Act. So the Employment Non-Discrimination Act was going to be voted on along with the Defense of Marriage Act. And we got, you know, a number of politicians and celebrities and people to do public service announcements and full page ads and papers and, you know, hoping to sway Congress. And, you know, actually asked my mom if she would, you know, be if we could film her, you know, to be part of like one of these public service announcements. And she said yes. And so, you know, out there is a public service announcement. My mom saying, you know, if a gay person is doing their job, they should be able to do it. You know, if and that's the most important thing. It has nothing to do with, you know, who they are, but it has to do with are they doing their job, you know. And so even though, you know, she initially didn't kind of get any of, you know, the actual LGBT activism stuff, she was able to realize, you know, what it was all about. So that was pretty cool.
Now, I'm interested in knowing more about your humanism and how you came out about as being a humanist, both to yourself and to the world. And I'm curious as to whether you think that that's influenced your LGBT activism.
Well, I think everything that we are and everything that we do influences who we are, you know, and you know, what we become. I think what I first got out of it was healthy, healthy doubt of what people might think of as absolutes. No matter it's, you know, whether it has to do with, you know, a religious issue or whether it has to do with, you know, public opinion or whether it has to do with society and, you know, sociology, that, you know, what my revelation was, you know, just because it's written or somebody says it doesn't automatically mean that it's true and that I have to believe it. And, you know, I have, you know, certainly seen, you know, people who have benefited from organized religion. I'll say it, it's true. They do exist. But I also see, you know, over the centuries and, you know, the damage that has been done in the name of. You know, particularly think when it, you know, related to LGBT issues, you know, I talked today about, you know, the two hurdles that both humanists and queer activists have to jump are, you know, are ignorance and often organized religion. And it's you know, I think this idea that you have to, you're either one or the other, you know, you have to be, you know, something. And, you know, just the understanding that, you know, that believing in yourself is okay. It's not, you know, it's not selfish, you know, and it's not, you know, narcissism, but it's, you know, it's recognizing that, you know, that we are powerful beings as well, and have the ability to, you know, to influence our own lives and the lives of other people. And so it seems like a natural, you know, a natural fit, a natural alliance. That's what I was looking for.
And Greta, you asked an interesting question during the session in which Candace received her award about how to have more inclusion of humanism in the LGBT community.
Well, yeah, that's certainly an experience that I've had, is that I've found myself being much more accepted as a queer person in the atheist movement than I am as an atheist in the queer movement. And frankly, that's made me be much more active in the atheist movement and kind of step away from the queer movement in a lot of ways. And I do a lot of speaking on college and university campuses, and I'm seeing that especially among a lot of young queer non-believers, is that they're saying the atheist movement loves me, the LGBT movement wants me to shut up. And I'm very concerned, actually, about the future of the LGBT movement, because I think that we're alienating young non-believers who are this hugely growing demographic. You know, non-belief is, you know, we all know this, that there's more non-believers among people who are 25 and younger than any other age group. And I have this concern that we're going to be alienating those people if we're not able to find room at the table in the LGBT movement for them.
Right, so I'd like to build off that comment. I've actually heard, and I'm curious as to your perspective, as to the accuracy of this, that there is a strategy within some of the more influential groups in the LGBT movement to align themselves with churches, and therefore, as part of that, they have to remove themselves a bit from movements like the humanist movement. And I'm curious as to your thoughts both on that and as well as how can we bring the LGBT movement closer to the humanist movement and vice versa?
I'm not aware of any like overt strategy to align with churches. Our organization, I mean, I remember when I started working with HRC in 1995, you know, the voices of those who were opposed to the work that we were doing, you know, 99% of them were people who said what they were saying, you know, as a Christian, as a this, as a that. And those are the only voices we were hearing of people who talked about, you know, about faith. And, you know, one of the strategies was to make sure that there are also voices of faith who are supportive of LGBT equality that were part of the conversation as well, so that it didn't seem like, you know, that whole either or thing. I mentioned before that, like, you know, if you're a person of faith, you got to be anti-gay, and if you're a gay person, you know, you can't be a person of faith. And so it's been an uphill battle to counter that belief. And I think that there is, the strategy, and I'm not even like, you know, a strategist at HRC, but like part of it is, you know, to get people who are involved in those particular denominations or religions to be more active in speaking up, speaking out, getting churches and synagogues to be welcoming and affirming, you know, to either LGBT, you know, congregants, you know, as well as, you know, under the mantle of social justice, being active as, you know, as a church or as a synagogue or as a whatever. And I don't see it as an intentional exclusion, but I think that it's progression, and that, you know, focusing on this right now as a counter to, you know, the message that so many people have heard, that it'll be a natural step then to bring all of the communities together, the humanist communities and the, you know, religion and faith community as well too, because there's enough work to be done. It's not as if people there, you know, it would be a wise to exclude anyone who wants to be active and to do the work. And, you know, I think for part of it, you know, we talked earlier that it is ignorance on behalf of some people who are, Christian or Jewish or whatever denomination, a lack of understanding about what it means to be an atheist or agnostic or a humanist, and why would you want to get involved in it? And I think it's, you know, even within our supporters, there's still ignorance. I think it's not unlike the transgender issue in the lesbian, gay, bisexual community, that there's still a lot of, you know, gay folk who don't get what transgender means or why gender identity is something they should care about. And it's still, we'll always be educating people about it. Even if they're already friends, there's still going to be some things that they need to learn.
Candace, thank you so much for being here and speaking with the Humanist Hour. And more importantly, thank you for doing the work that you do and for using your voice.
Happy to. Thanks. You all.
All right, listeners, that was Candace Gingrich-Jones. Don't forget, you can purchase her book from Amazon, The Accidental Activist. You can read more about the work that she does for the Human Rights Campaign from their website, hrc.org. You can find out what Pride events are happening in your town at interpride.org. All of these links will be on the show notes page for this episode at thehumanisthour.org. We welcome your feedback, whether through the comment form or through our listener comment line, the number for which is 202-618-1371.
Next month, we're going to be having our sexpisode for 2011.
We figured it's a pretty logical jump from sexuality to sex. Who enjoys sex more, religious people or non-religious people?
I have my own opinion there, but we're going to bring in an expert. We'll have Daryl Ray, who
conducted a study. He's got numbers, folks. This was a quantitative study.
A study of about 14,000 people. So we should get some statistical significance in there. And yeah, I like talking about sex. It's going to be fun. I think it might be a little bit explicit, but
yep.
Something to look forward to.
And until then, thanks for listening to The Humanist Hour. I'm Jess Constantine.
And I'm Todd Stiefel. There's no need for it. My dream is peace and harmony around me. Nothing but tranquility and serene surroundings. And that's why you'll get nothing but the best stuff out of me. Because all I really want is to make my dreams a reality for it. That's what I call a dream. My dream. Rational response. Why? My dream. Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about
you and me.
Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be.
Let's talk about sex.